I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Joining us on the podcast this week, the one and only Robbie Savage. We're finally underway, and once again, there you are, happy as Larry. Tell me about yourself, because everybody has an opinion, no matter who they are, about Robbie Savage. You're a bit like Marmite. How do you describe yourself?
I would describe myself as a caring, loyal. That might be questioned by some Birmingham fans. If I'm involved in something, Tom, I will do it wholeheartedly and I will give 100% everything I'm involved in. I'm passionate. And I love football. So let make no mistake that from the early age of 4 or 5 years of age, all I've ever done and all I've ever wanted to do is play football, talk football. Football's my life. And you know, now with my role up as a pundit, director of football at Macclesfield, I've got the opportunity to continue that for a number of years. So, you know, I used to have posters on my wall. Everything was football. Everything is football, and football's my life. So you might see the persona, the way I look. People think that I used to go nightclubbing. People think that, you know, I was flash. People think all these things about me, but they don't know me. I'm insecure. Yeah, I think you know that. I'm quite an insecure person. So on the outside, people can think what they want, but inside, deep down, and people who know me the best know that, you know, I'm a decent guy.
I'm glad you said insecure, because I know that for a fact, that even as in your pomp as a player, you're playing for Wales, you won trophies, you still were insecure about your own ability. And I always found that strange.
It was just because I didn't want to let people down. So I remember Tom speaking to you on many occasions after I played for Birmingham. You know, and I would say most weeks for Birmingham, I'd have been a good 8 out of 10. You know, on the other occasion, I was a 6 or a 7. I'd automatically think that Brucey was going to leave me out the following week. That's the way I was, because my standards at Birmingham and everywhere I went were so high that in my mind, if I had a 6 or a 7 out of 10, listen, there'd be other occasion, certainly later in my career at Derby, where I'd be a 2 or a 3 out of 10. If that. But, you know, when I was at my best, my peak, Leicester, Birmingham, Blackburn, I'd always feel that if I dropped below a 7 and I'd one bad game, that one bad game would cost me my place. Then I'd be on the foot of the youth saying, Tom, what do you think the gaffer will do next week? They can leave me out. And I used to go home and worry about it.
I've never told anybody about those conversations. I've never mentioned those conversations to anybody. And yet here you are.
We were close to them. Listen, I don't mind admitting it, that, you know, we formed a relationship after you hammered me in the first interview we done.
Let's get that out the way. Steve Bruce rang me and said, I'm signing Robbie Savage. And I'll be honest with you, I said, you're crazy. He's a wanker. He'll get you the sack. That's exactly what I said. And the next thing I got a call, he's saying, he's at the training ground, come up and do an interview. I said, well, I can't do it without telling him what I've said. And I came up and I repeated it to you, and I thought I was going to get punched. And you just went, I've had a lot worse than that, pal. We'll get on. And that was it.
Yeah. And I said, I'll prove you wrong, didn't I? I
said, you said you proved me wrong.
Judge me on my performances. And listen, honesty is key. And you know, from that moment on, I respected you. And that's why we got on so well. And, you know, the amount of times we've sat in a change room, it used to get in early, and I used to be the first one in.
You were always the first.
First one in, last one away, training. And match day, I like to prepare properly, you know, no matter how old I was. And I, we'd sit, wouldn't we, Tom, at 1 o'clock sometimes, quarter to one in the home changing room, talking football, what do you think today? You know, and I miss those days, but that's how much I was ingrained in that football club. I loved it. I loved the people around it. You know, some fantastic people. So I missed it. Of course, when I left, and we all, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about that. But, you know, and that to this day, it hurts me because that wasn't me. That wasn't me what I'd done. It was just the fact that I wanted to go and play for my hero. Excuses were made about being closer to my parents. and in part, that was true, you know, because obviously we lost my father from Alzheimer's at 63. So, you know, and I'm still in the same house now, close to my mother. So my whole life wanted to move back to the area, which was close to my parents. And it's a lovely area where we live, Macclesfield. It's close to my wife's parents' family home. So inevitably, the move was the right thing for me at that time. And by moving to this area, you know, I'm now director of football at Macclesfield FC. So it was the right decision, albeit I went about it completely the wrong way.
Well, while we're talking about it, I mean, you know, Blues fans adored you. You know that.
Yeah, you know. I do. I let them down, Tom. Listen, I let them down. But what nobody can question is that every time I pulled on that blue shirt, I give every single ounce of energy, every bit of adrenaline. I was prepared to run through brick walls. I was prepared to get hurt. I played with injuries. I played with a life-threatening injury with my neck. I'd done everything I could to play for that team and give everything because the fans were amazing. That night, we beat Aston Villa. I've never experienced an atmosphere like it. You know, when it went under Peter Enkelman's foot, obviously then the DN Dublin headbutt 2-0 away from home. I still get, you know, Villa fans onto me now when Villa, if I ever go to Villa. But what these people don't realise is the headbutt, listen, it was a headbutt. So be it. It didn't hurt. I didn't go down. We won the game 2-0. And this is what I don't really get. It was a 5-0 victory over Villa that season. And we were magnificent. So, you know, I was prepared to do anything I could to win for that football club.
I mean, you're actually in the Macclesfield club now. I mean, you're a pundit on national TV, you're radio, you've been on TV. You don't need to be embroiled in a game that, you know, is so fragile and lets people down. Why on earth are you back in it at Macclesfield as director of football? Why?
Because it's an amazing opportunity for me to learn, you know, have another facet to my education in football and in life. You know, I never knew the business side of football. I'm now involved in that. You know, I'm making big decisions here with Rob Smethers, the owner. I can build a football club, the ins and outs, what's going to happen, employing Danny Whittaker as manager, some great people, you know, giving the community their football club back. You know, I walk on the road outside the leasing.com stadium now. There's cars stopping, putting their, you know, fist out the window saying, go on, Sav. And, you know, for me, grassroots football, which Macclesfield FC will be going hopefully into the pyramid system. We don't know what step yet. But the grassroots system for me is something I'm passionate about. That's where I started. You know, my dad was my manager. I'd go on the grass, the local playing field, mud everywhere, you know, the park pitches, putting the nets up at 9:30 in the morning, taking them down. My dad was the ref. My dad got punched by a parent, you know, in the face. You know, so I've been through all aspects of it. I'm a grassroots manager now with my youngest son. My eldest son is doing exceptionally at Manchester United. So I'm that parent. I've been a grassroots player. I'm a parent. I'm a manager. And I wanted to give something back to the game that's treated me so well.
That's extremely commendable. And tempted to put your boots on?
Well, I did it for Stockport Town, didn't I, last?
Yes, you did.
45. And, you know, I will, you know, probably the first game here in a friendly for Mac. You know, I'll probably put, it'd be full house if I play.
Oh, dear.
No, listen, it never leaves you, Tom. It never leaves you. Listen, and I'm 46, you know, the compound fracture on my leg, you know, that's still sore every day. My neck, I can't, you know, I haven't got much mobility now. My neck, my knees are shot to pieces, my groins, and my whole body, you know, the amount of, you know, painkillers I used to take on a daily basis to get through. And then obviously now you're thinking, you know, the situation my body is in, I'm in the gym every day mentally, that really helps me because, you know, when what people will never understand, Tom, is at 37, when you put the minute you play your last game, and it was for Derby against Reading, you know, the Reading fans were magnificent. The next morning, you put your foot out of bed, you're no longer a footballer. You're no longer that person where every single body at a football club, you are the 11 players, the 25 squad, the whole players, everybody does everything for you. Whether it's a restaurant being booked, whether it's a holiday, whatever somebody wants, whatever you want as a footballer, it's done for you.
Yeah.
The next day, you put your foot out, bow your tire, that's it. You're just a number. That's it. And that's hard to comprehend where you're thinking, wow. I mean, now in, because I don't think football's not the real world, the environment of changing room, you know, it's the environment, it's a harsh environment. People from the outside, to go in there for a week, poof, you've got to be strong. You have to be strong. And, you know, I miss that change room environment. I miss the camaraderie. I miss the acquaintances I got. Not friends, because, you know, you could count on one hand you've made friends from football. So I would say acquaintances. But it's not the real world. It is the best environment when you're doing well to be in. But when you step outside of it and then somebody tells you you're no longer a footballer, it's very difficult. And, you know, I did struggle for a bit, but now, I mean, you know, I mean, I'm in a great place with my life in terms of, you know, my football, and I love it.
I wish I had a pound for every ex-player who said that dressing room, they miss it. Even though it was a cruel place at times, they miss it.
Cruel, Tom. Very.
You wouldn't wear a new jumper, would you?
No, you would. You know, as an apprentice at Manchester United, it was a harsh environment. The class of 92. You know, the initiation ceremonies. Yeah. You know, and you have to be a strong character. You can't show any weakness. And you know, there's a fine line, Tom. There's a fine line between stepping over the line. We all know that. And
yeah.
Hopefully, as a captain for four Premier League clubs, I would look after the young lads. You know, I'd hope that if you had, speak to any young lads who played under my captaincy, they would say, do you know what, he looked after me. And I feel I did that. Of course, you know, the banter would be flowing. And, you know, but you can't show weakness. You cannot show weakness in a changing room. But do you know what, Tom? You miss it. You do. Every player I speak to, you know, you do miss it.
I mean, I wish I had a pound for every time you walked in at Birmingham and saw me and you went, FM's here from whatever country you wanted to say. And I had to be strong as well, you know, to deal with footballers, because that I knew that was the environment, that was the banter. I've grown up with them all my life, professional footballers. If you can't stand that heat, you really have to get out the kitchen.
Tom, I never used those words to you. I was always very polite to you. Yeah. I said, the best, you know, all I used to get from you was, how many goals have you got in the Radio Academy Awards? How many of this have you got?
Well, to be fair, I was going to mention that. I know you've got a Sony Award. I've got four. You might see them on the wall behind me if you keep looking. But seriously, your neck injury, that shouldn't stop you playing, because you never edited it anyway.
I didn't. That was a worrying situation where, you know, I had the operation in Birmingham. The surgeon said to me that one more heavy impact would have, you know, I would have been paralysed from neck down.
That's how serious.
I remember doing it at Charlton away. It fell on my hands and I just thought, oh, they had pins and needles down both hands. Thought nothing of it. I wanted to play. Didn't want to miss the last 6 weeks of the season. Never went for a scan. And then finished the season, but the pins and needles got worked to the point, Tom, where I couldn't put my hands in cold water. It was that the sensation was so bad, the pins and needles. And then we had a end of season testimonial in Cardiff. And I remember Jonty, Damian Johnson, in the warm-up, nudged me in the back and I fell to the ground. And nobody to this day will believe me. And for 20 seconds, I could not move. I could not move. My body, neck down. I could not move. And then I got up and I was like jelly, went to see the physio. And I said, you don't believe this. And because I was a bit of a hypochondriac, but I'd always play, you know, hypochondriac in terms of my health, not my fitness. So if I had a sore knee, I'd play. If I had a sore back, I'd play. If I couldn't hardly walk, I'd try and play. You know, it was more about my health. I was a bit of a hypochondriac. But so I went in to see the physio and I said, you won't believe this, but I couldn't walk. I couldn't feel my body for 20 seconds. And when I got up, I was like jelly. And he said, listen, you'll be fine. Played the first half. And then on the bus on the way home, I said, Brucey wasn't there. I said, I need a scan. Something's not right. Anyway, I went for the scan because it was now 6 weeks or 8 weeks off for all the holidays. Yeah. And I remember being in the MRI scan. And I remember people walking into the glass screen because when you're lying down, you can just see and you hear the noises in an MRI scan. And I thought something's wrong. So as I've come out of the scanner, they've kept me in the position, put the neck brace on, straight to theatre in intensive care. And I had the disc in C5, I think it was 70% in my spinal cord. Oh my so God. one more whack and that would have been it. So very fortunate. And then 9 weeks later I played. So that's how much I put myself on the line to play football, you know. And now you look at my mobility of my neck is hardly there. So but these are the things you do as a footballer to play because of the love of the game. But it could have cost me, I would say, probably my life.
Which is most important, family and all the rest of it. It's the most important thing. Sometimes who sit on the side, us fans, don't realise what players go through sometimes and put their bodies through. At that Birmingham side, though, you mentioned Steve Bruce, some great players. But for me, what stood out, it was a proper team. It was a team. Did you feel that as a player?
Yeah. You think of the characters, Benno, the goalie, Ian Bennett, Jeff, Paul Devlin. You know, me and Paul Devlin on a Friday night away games, we used to wrestle. We used to have our submissions. And we'd be fighting in the hotel rooms about an hour. And me and them, the beds would be all over the place. The curtains would be down. It would be relentless, would be absolutely shattered, and then we'd get up the next day and play. But this is the camaraderie was incredible. It was absolutely incredible, and that's why we've done so well. Listen, we weren't as big as Aston Villa. We weren't on as much money as Aston Villa players. We didn't have, you know, the 40,000 fans, but I tell you what we did have. We had this amazing team spirit and this willingness to fight for each other, and I think that showed. And that first season, you know, was amazing. And obviously we got Christophe Dugri, and I'm sure that, you know, world-class, what a player, World Cup winner. He was that good, Tom. He comes second in play of the year, that year.
To who? but even I spoke to Jeff Horsfield, and he was saying the same thing. I mean, Horsfield and Dugarry as the front two, how unlikely pair was that? But they seemed to work. It all seemed to work. And I suppose Steve Bruce has got to take some of the credit.
Brucey, listen, an amazing man. I was with him when I was at the class of 92. He was always looked after the young lads. And I took that in my career when I seen it, the captain of Manchester United when I was a young kid, the way he treated us, the way he spoke to us, the way he stopped, the way he helped us. And I'll never forget that. And then when he was my manager, this we fell out, of course, but we're friends now. And he was a good, good man with me, and I let him down. I'll never forget that. He wanted to keep me. He was desperate to keep me, Tom. And I remember speaking to you about it, and Benno, you know, obviously sadly no longer with us, you know, fantastic man, fantastic football man. I remember speaking to you and saying, what am I going to do? You know, but inevitably, Steve tried his best to keep me. And you know, he couldn't, whatever would have happened, I would have gone. And it was done wrong. But Steve Bruce is football man, surrounds himself with good people. And it was the perfect fit, wasn't it, Tom?
Yeah.
It was the perfect fit. Perfect. Steve Bruce and Birmingham at that time.
I think he took it personal, you going, you know, almost. Yeah. He brought you in. And I think it hurt him, if I'm truthful. I mean, I know it sounds silly in football, but it hurt him.
Yeah, it did. It did, and it hurt a lot of Birmingham fans. It hurt him because, you know, he gave me everything, really. I just signed a new deal. And maybe there was a bit of resentment in me because player of the year, my impact affect, you know, when people say he's a good player, listen, I've seen there's been lots of better players than me. Listen, that's not an understatement, lots of better players than me technically. But do these better players have the same effect on a game as I could for Birmingham? For me, I tell my son now, my under 15s, you can have all the ability in the world, but I want to see you affect the game. And if you can affect the game, whether that's by a tackle, by a pass, by an interception, by a goal, by a set piece, by a run into, you know, to close something down, you need to affect the game. And, you know, I could affect the game for Birmingham. And I think taking me out of that side, we had Aloisi saying that, you know, that game, myself and him were magnificent in the middle of the park against Villa. But I think the effect I could have on that team, not just on the pitch, but off the pitch as well, in terms of that camaraderie and that, you know, character, I think he really missed that. And it was a huge blow to him. And I realise it now, you know, in my grassroots team, you know, when a couple of the players who can't affect the game are not in it, it's a different team. And, you know, I think I hurt Steve Bruce, and, you know, we've since apologised. Listen, he's got a tough job at Newcastle. But I remember sitting, Tom, in his office when he could have gone to Newcastle. And he didn't go because he felt he had a job to do at Birmingham. And he, you know, he was in a fantastic point in his career. He didn't go. He stuck with Birmingham. Then he got the opportunity later on. So when I hear Newcastle fans now say about Steve Bruce, I was in an office with him when he had an opportunity when I was at Birmingham, and he turned it down. He didn't want to go because he had a job to do at Birmingham.
That's amazing. You mentioned there about your impact on a game, and two things stand out. One, I have a saying, you know, about ability and desire, because ability without desire is a waste of time. And desire was something you had in bucket loads. Is that fair assumption?
100% desire. You know, people throughout my career, Tom, would thought I was a drinker. As I mentioned before, you know, he would, like a party, would go out. Never. I was so professional because, you know, first in, last out of the training ground all the way through my career. Lived my life right. Because I knew that if I wasn't physically at the top of my game, fitness-wise, because I was only 9.5 stone. You know, I look at those shirts now, the Blues, they were so big on me. I see pictures. So I had to be right. So I just thought that I've got a short career. I want to make the most of it. And when I see players of today, you know, with far more ability than me, maybe they can get away with it because of their ability, but I couldn't. I had to make sure I was right. So that desire come from within. That desire come from my mum and dad, you know, the way they brought me up. That, you know, that willingness to do the best you possibly can with what you're given. And I did that. So I would say that I was very fortunate. I made the most of what I had. But I'd say to my son now, who's going on a similar journey, you know, if you can come off a football pitch thinking, I give everything I could and did my best, if that's not good enough, you can't do anything more.
Well, you, Damian Johnson, all the team, but you and Damian Johnson particularly, there was nothing in the tank when you came off, and that was always to your credit. Win, lose, or draw, there was nothing. And I think the Blues fans appreciated that. Just talk about...
On that, Tom, there'd be times when, you know, the nutrition, you know, years ago wasn't the same, where, you know, you wouldn't have a meal after the game. The nutrition wasn't the same. And there'd be times when I've left the Blues to St Andrews to drive back to where I lived in Alcester, that way. I'd have to stop. I'd have to stop in a petrol station with a sugar rush, and I'd physically be sick and dizzy and nearly faint because I had to, you know, the amount of time I've stopped at a petrol station and just filled myself with Coke, chocolate, you know, anything I could get my hands on to get that sugar back in me. You know, the amount of time that I did that because I was so exhausted, you know, I've never really talked about it, but, you know, I did because I was that tired and the sugar wasn't back in my system. You know, the amount of times that I've stopped the petrol station to refuel because I was exhausted.
Talk to me about Man U, because you were in that team, which was amazing, and you were part of that. What was Sir Alex like, though? As we all know him, and everybody has opinions about Sir Alex, funny enough, but you know him, you worked with him, you know, you played for him. What was he like?
Well, you know, I didn't... You say that it was more Eric Harrison for me. You know, obviously so sad that, you know, Eric's no longer with us, but I never really associated my Man United career with Alex Ferguson. He was always, you know, the first team manager, and I played for the reserves under Jimmy Ryan. So he was the boss, but I never really seen him in a working environment because I never trained with the first team. I wasn't fortunate enough. So, you know, obviously you knew of his presence. You know, he wanted me to get my hair cut several occasions. I didn't.
Sir Alex, to many, is the greatest manager of all time. Do you have that opinion?
Yeah, you've got to look at his achievements, yeah. What he's won, his achievements, the players he brought through. You listen to amazing players speak about him so highly. So for me, in my era, Sir Alex Ferguson has to be the best. But you look at now Pep Guardiola, the way he's evolved football, the way grassroots teams are playing, like trying to play like Man City, playing out from the back. You look at Arsene Wenger's time in the Premier League, the way he changed football, and Pep's doing that now. So I would say those three. Obviously, then you can go back, you know, to Yori and Brian Clough and managers like that. Luckily, I played under Nigel Clough and heard stories about, you know, his fantastic father. So I would say for me, Sir Alex Ferguson, just because of the way he, you know, that the teams he then created, then rebuilt, which is quite remarkable.
You've always had belief in yourself. How did you deal with going to Crewe, from Man U to Crewe? Was it the belief that you'd eventually make it to the top that made you do that?
Just that this, you know, the night I got released from Manchester United, I was in hospital, had a car crash. You know, so I was in a hospital bed, having to tell my parents that, you know, I'd been released from Man United because I crashed, because mentally I thought I'd let them down. Because we all know that what parents do for their children, you know, the mum and dad's taxis, you do everything for your kids. You pick them up, you take them there, you wait, you miss dinner, you miss tea. What we do for our children, my mum and dad did that for me. They enabled me to have a career. And without them, I wouldn't be talking to you now. So I thought I let them down. My mind was elsewhere, the car crash. And ended up in hospital the same day I got released from Manchester United. But I had this belief, my father had a belief. And it was tough the first year at Crewe. I was in the B team, nowhere near the first team. I was really slight, really, really skinny. You've had everything done for you at Manchester United. Then you've got to go to Crewe and, you know, wash your own kit. I know that sounds stupid, but it's a completely different kind of football, different environment. And, you know, it was very difficult, but I persevered. I kept going. I worked harder than anybody else. I went home and worked, you know, even at home, I would go on the streets and run to make sure I was in the best, giving myself the best opportunity. And once again, in my life, prove people wrong.
And you did. And is that, you've mentioned your dad a lot of times. It seems like if there is the one person in your life that, you know, was your inspiration, it was him.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously, I miss him dearly, Tom. He was my hero. You know, so sad to see a man before your eyes, you know, at 58, not knowing who you are, you know, paying no attention to his grandkids. You know, and it hurts to this day that my eldest son, Charlie, who's at Manchester United, you know, I know my dad would have been the first one to pick him up. He'd have been the granddad on the sideline, so proud. You know, and he's missed out on all that. And, you know, the times I've, you know, wish my dad was still here so I could talk to him about problems, about everything. Yeah, of course. And, you know, to see my mother deteriorate after, you know, she still can't come to terms with losing him at such a young age. So, yeah, it was hard, Tom. You know, he was my hero. He was the one that told me when, you know, if I hadn't played well, he would be the one that would, you know, gee me up and say, listen, you know, the letter he wrote to me when I left at 15 to go to Manchester United, I still look at it. So, yeah, listen, Tom, it's exceptionally hard because I can just picture the proudest granddad in the world now watching his grandson follow the journey I did. Do you know what I mean? So, when I'm there, Tom, as a dad, and I see grandparents, you know, I just wish my dad was there to see my son.
I mean, I empathise totally because I've been through exactly the same. See my dad with dementia. I've been through it, so I know exactly how you feel. And to this day, I get emotional, and I can see you are now. So just, you've played for a few managers, but how important was it in your life playing for your country, Wales?
Massively important, Tom. It was my dream as a schoolboy was to play on the race course, play for Wrexham. I played on the race course, but I never played for Wrexham. Was to play for my country at all levels. I think there's only two of us, myself and Robert Page, who played at every single level for Wales because there was an under-18 schoolboy team and myself and Rob played for that team when we were in the last year of senior school. And I think there's only two of us who have played at every single level for Wales, under-15 schoolboy, under-16 youth, under-18 schoolboys, under-21, and then the first team. So it's something I'm proud of. Obviously, it ended in a way which, when I retired, the John Toshack era. But that was that. I'm a strong character. I do what I think's right. Maybe retiring with 39 caps was the wrong thing to do. But I was never going to play, I believe, for Wales, you know, under John Toshack. It was, you know, I wasn't his type of player. That's fine. Every manager has a decision to make. You know, but if I hadn't retired, I think that my performances in Europe for Blackburn would have been enough for the media, for my teammates to get me back in the squad. But by retiring, I made it easy for the manager. And you know, that it is what it is. But, you know, another regret, I should have had 80th caps, no question, for my country. But 39, it's 39 than loads of people will have.
That never get. But the thing that stands out for me is you had to deal with adversity when Man United said no thank you, John Toshack virtually no thank you, but you've bounced back at every time. And so how big a part is your mental strength in the whole of your career?
Massively. In the media now, Tom, people say, what do you know? You didn't play in Champions League, you didn't play in a major tournament. Well, you know, you could, people say on social media, you could write Robbie's Savage's knowledge on the back of a stamp of football. But my knowledge of football, you know, every league, I love football, Tom. You know, lower league football, you know, the pyramid system, National League down, foreign football, you know, foreign leagues, La Liga, Serie A, you know, I watch it all. I love it. So my knowledge of football, I would say, in terms of, you know, My every Christmas present, I got the Rothman. Every Christmas, I got the Rothmans.
Rothmans.
I still got them. I love them. I go through every page. So my knowledge of football is up there because I have to. So to this day, I get it. Why should we listen to Robbie Savage? He only won one trophy. He never played in a top team. He never played this. But to have 631 career games, 350 Premier League games, captain in four Premier League sides, playing for my country, going through adversity, being told you're not good enough, fighting every single day to prove people wrong, I would suggest that I don't okay.
And of course, I think you were hit by a referee.
Yeah. You
were hit by a player who kicked a ball and smacked you in the at Villa Park, I think it was, hit Stillian Beck. Do you think it was all deliberate?
Probably. I'm sure there's lots of people who would go back now and want to do the same. But I just think that I didn't care, Tom. When I went onto the pitch, I didn't care what I had to do to win. Didn't care.
Do you remember a game at Birmingham? It was a poor game. I think it was against Leicester. It was a really drab sort of game. And then you ran half the length of the pitch. You smashed their fullback, who hit the linesman. Liverpool. Hit the linesman. It went over the boards. The whole game came alive. The referee came. Everybody, the crowd came alive.
We won 2-0.
Yeah. You lifted
it. There was one time on a, I think it was a Tuesday night, Middlesbrough. Danny Mills in the corner. Do you remember?
Yeah.
It was 0-0. Nothing was happening. I sprinted and thought, right, I don't care what's happening here. If I get a yellow card, I'm just going to smash everything. Actually missed Danny Mills, missed the ball. He grabbed me by the throat. That lifted everybody. And then I took a short free kick. We scored. Then I put one in the top corner, free kick, and we won the game 3-1. So, you know, I knew that I had this great thing that I knew when a game needed to be lifted. You know, I got 145 yellow cards in my career, only one red. In terms of in professional football. One in international football and one red, and that was for Blackburn, and that was two yellows, and the second one was for handball. But I was clever. I knew that on a yellow card, I'd always think that my first one, if it's going to be a yellow, I'm just going to smash somebody if it needs to be. And to get everybody going. But I was clever not to get sent off.
I could talk to you for hours, and I know you've got work to do, and we'll have to do this again because there's so much to say.
That doesn't work the same way with you, Tom.
any regrets in your career apart from Strictly Come Dancing?
that was great for me, Tom, because people who didn't know me actually thought that show was amazing for me. That people thought, you know, he's actually all right. He's a caring, sensitive, insecure, you know, young man, as I was at the time. But I've got, you know, regrets. Yeah, the Birmingham situation, retiring from Wales early. But on a whole, great people like yourself, you know, there's so many people who ring me and say, can you do this? And I'll do it. Of course they will. You know, I don't ask for any money because I owe it to people. Like, you know people have a job to do. I know people, it's hard out there. And, you know, what annoys me now is when I see some pundits who were reluctant to speak to press afterwards, but now they're making a living out of, you know, on the TV and radio, but that's their prerogative. You know, I was always given to the press because I know how hard it is for local radio stations, local newspapers to, you know, get stories, and they're the heartblood of a football club, the local media and you know, radio and papers. And that's why my relationship with the likes of you, you know, people at the Leicester Mercury up in Blackburn, Derby, Steve Nicholson at Derby, you know, they're the ones who, you know, players should give their time to because they support the community. And that's why, you know, I give my time to you. Although, yeah, at times you bored me. But, you know, other than that.
Well, that's a coincidence because I saw you play. Have you?
I seen your team. I went on the podcast, the Tilton end, for those guys, you know, run me up and say, can you do it? And I said, of course I will. You know, of course I will. And I give back, Tom. I give back. And, you know, on that podcast, saying that, I remember you being on it and I was in your best team, which meant a lot because I remember David Sullivan saying that I was one of his all-time favourite Birmingham players. And I used to wind you up, didn't I, saying that Trevor Francis, legend, Christoph Dugby, legend. And let's be fair, I should have been in every single one. Whoever's done that podcast, I should have been in every single team. But because of my personality, because people don't want to put me in it because they might not like me, that's the reason I'm not in. But there's no... my impact on that team was one of the best ever. End on.
No, yeah, it was great. And Sav, it's been... it's been amazing. We will do it again sometime in the future because there's so much more to talk about with your wonderful career. Good luck with Macclesfield and good luck with your grassroots because you push grassroots, which I love.
Yeah, I love it, Tom. I love it. You know, I love it. Obviously, I was on I do it to enable kids to, you know, enjoy themselves, have fun, build friendships because they've missed out so much. They've missed that education. They've missed that on, you know, play, sports they love, you know, they've suffered mentally, the mental and well-being and physical well-being. So if I, you know, if I've enabled grassroots sports to come back 1% quicker, you know, I've done a good thing. So I can't wait to see all the, you know, youngsters playing the sport they love, hopefully on the 29th of March.
Good luck, sir. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for joining me, pal. It's been amazing.
Cheers, Tom. Top man.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.